I'm very happy now to welcome Kevin Soling. He is a filmmaker, writer, and musician, and his new film is called The War on Kids. It's screening here in Santa Fe on Monday, February 22nd at 6 in the evening. It's a free showing at the Educational Services Center at 610 Alta Vista Street, sponsored by the Santa Fe High School Parent Teacher Committee. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Oh, great. Thanks for having me.
So the film is called The War on Kids, and I've often thought that the metaphor, the war on this or that, is overused, the war on cancer, the war on drugs, things like that. But in your film, it's terrifyingly apt. Kids are being treated, as you show in this documentary, as if they were criminals or prisoners in their own schools because of policies like zero tolerance. What's going on?
Well, I mean, first, actually, I did struggle with the fact that the war on has been really overused, but it was profoundly apt, and so I did reluctantly end up using that as the name. I just couldn't find a better one. Basically, what's going on is there's been a sort of get tough attitude and approach towards youth in general, and not just in schools. It persists pretty much everywhere. And kids are kind of excluded from public spaces. There are hotels and housing communities and restaurants, you know, that all don't allow kids. And so schools are just another sort of battleground where actually one of the locations where you do see them. And there's this belief that the problems of many of the ills of society are that kids are solely responsible for them, not just the problems of the results with education, but also drugs and teen pregnancy and all sorts of other issues are blamed as if, you know, kids are held up as being the problem, and the response is this over-reliance on security and get-tough measures.
You cite a lot of incidents. For example, somebody brings in a butter knife, or somebody brings in a steak knife in their lunchbox where they had also brought a piece of steak, or somebody brings a Tweety Bird keychain into a school that doesn't allow chains. There's, I mean, a million things like this. These are incidents for which children, little children, are expelled from school or harshly disciplined, and occasionally the police even show up.
Yeah, that's again, that's become really common. It was these zero tolerance stories that inspired me to make the movie, just seeing these injustices and not just isolated cases. There are actually thousands, literally thousands of incidents of suspensions and expulsions for complete non-offenses. Things that should not have even required discipline are resulting in suspension and expulsion because the administrators are relying on just extreme forms of readings of school rules, because it ends up excusing them of any responsibility, because they can just cite, well, the rules say, you know, no chains, no knives. Drawings or stories, you know, are also used as grounds for suspension or expulsion. There's this hypersensitivity and fear of that violence or another Columbine could emerge, and they're just enacting these absurd and you know, incredibly harsh repressive policies.
So a bunch of kindergartners play cops and robbers on the playground, and they're expelled. A kid draws a gun in art class, they're expelled. I mean, it's absurd. I mean, there's no actual violence or danger of any kind going on, but it certainly seems like free speech is being violated.
Well, there's a pervasive sense of fear, and the administrators don't want to have to answer to the school board if they don't, and the school board is answerable to the parents. So it's a sort of feeding frenzy where everyone is sort of afraid that if they don't act tough and do these absurd suspensions and expulsions, that they're going to have someone to answer to, and no one has to answer to kids. Kids are completely powerless. And in terms of free speech violation, kids have no right to free speech. It's very limited what's been affirmed, and ultimately it could all be taken away, because ultimately principals or administrators have the power to repress or suppress anything that is considered disruptive of the education process. So there is no expectation, genuine expectation, for free speech in schools. So, you know, schools regularly censor newspapers, and, you know, again, they can cite that some form of speech is disruptive, and that is, you know, that's all that's required. And kids also, children also in school don't have the expectation of most other civil rights either. And that's kind of one of the complaints, one of the major complaints I raised in the film is the impact that having youth go through 18 years of their life with no knowledge, expectation, or ability to exercise their civil rights and presume to be in a democratic society and have understandings and expectations of what their rights are and should be and how to exercise them, and ultimately is eroding our civil liberties as a result of creating these generations of people who have no experience with democratic rights.
It's not only democratic rights, and that's a huge part of it. It's also just simply the education that is necessary to become a citizen in a democracy. It's that sense of having a responsibility of citizenship, of being empowered to exercise both rights and responsibilities in a community. None of that exists when you're being treated like a prisoner.
Well, one of the central arguments I have against public school in general as an institution, and that is, you know, ultimately the conclusion that I came to in the process of making this film, which is it of course comes across as a very radical statement, but when you analyze it and you break it down, the only way schools can function is under this guidance of social efficiency, because you have, you know, hundreds or thousands of students in an institution that the system would fall apart if you weren't concerned with social efficiency. And social efficiency requires that anything that interferes with the so-called education process must be suppressed. So if schools are supposed to teach citizenship, and citizenship, at least the primary obligation, should be confronting tyranny or the emergence of tyrannical powers, you have people who are taught to live in a tyrannical environment and to suppress any urge that they have to resist and rebel, and that is one of the main lessons of schooling, is not to educate people in citizenship, but quite the opposite, to actually learn to be docile and to take orders.
One of the ways that this is accomplished, and you talk about how the war on drugs is exercised very strongly in schools, as if all children were potential drug dealers and drug addicts and so on, but on the other side, there's this tremendous irony, which is that kids are given very high amounts of the prescription version of basically street drugs, but they're prescribed drugs to keep them docile.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tremendous hypocrisy there. The drug war itself has been used as a means to basically, you know, eliminate all civil liberties. It's you know, there's considered the drug war exception to the Constitution, and it's been utilized against all members of society, you know, ever since Reagan reinstated or reinvigorated Nixon's war on drugs. And there have been many, many abuses, and those are pretty well documented as far as search and seizure and all sorts of other ways, asset forfeiture, the list is rather long. Certainly, you know, just violation of expectations that we have of privacy and the infiltration of police power. But once you have that, it's been used as a means of this kind of prison-like environment that we see in schools. And somehow, when these same versions or similar versions of these same drugs are prescribed, that somehow is okay. And it is a profound hypocrisy. And the number of kids that are being prescribed these drugs is, you know, just keeps escalating. And my research seemed to indicate that it is solely to make kids adapt to this prison-like environment. That is, it's an unnatural environment. It's hard to go to a prison-like environment and spend 7 hours or so there of the day where you're supposed to just sit still indoors and listen to boring lessons and take orders and not be able to socialize and do everything that kind of goes against your basic instinct. And most kids, or many kids, have trouble, you know, adapting to that environment, as they should not be able to adapt to that environment. And as a result, they're drugged. It's profoundly disturbing.
90%, as you point out in the film, of the prescriptions in the world of Ritalin are prescribed in the United States. We've got 4 million kids on Ritalin. What does it do to children, this particular drug, in the short run and in the long run?
Well, I'm not a doctor, but from what they've reported, there are both physiological, you know, effects, certainly, because you're putting a drug in a body that's still developing, and the brain then has to adapt to this new environment of having this drug in their system. One of the doctors just describes it as a bath of toxicity, and just, you know, literally says that it's a toxic chemical that's in one's system. And it will affect development, and that's just intuitive. That obviously there's going to be an impact on the developing system when you introduce an outside chemical. But the short term effects are sometimes the desired effects. But then ultimately the system fights back against the drugs, and ultimately kids are oftentimes put on a cocktail of drugs to deal with the side effects of the system fighting back from the initial drug. And it also, one of the things I guess that came out is that it does stunt growth, but not just physical growth, but also the growth of internal organs within the system. And I guess there have been reports of nervous tics and other presumably undesirable behavior that can result, and as well as incidents of murder and suicide have also increased as a result. And those are all documented side effects or even disclosed as part of the drug warning. And that's one of the things is that there have been a number of psychiatrists that have argued against the diagnosis of ADD and ADHD and say that it's simply behavioral, that's not neurological. And I fall on that camp and agree with them that there isn't any neurological, you know, physiological basis that it is behavioral. But, you know, you will hear other people that argue otherwise with regards to that. But it certainly has also the psychological ramifications for kids thinking that there's something wrong with them when in fact it's just that they have difficulty adapting to a very unhealthy environment.
And lest you think, ladies and gentlemen, that the prison metaphor is exaggerated, the film that we're talking to Kevin Soling, the filmmaker of this film, The War on Kids. You compare, in documentary style, a minimum security prison and a regular school. I think it was a high school. And they're so similar, you can't even tell which is which, really, if you didn't know, if the narrator weren't pointing out this is a prison and this is a school.
Yeah, well, actually, the difference is that the prison is much, much nicer is the tragedy to it all. The resources, everything in the prison, the library was nicer, the facility was nicer, it was a cleaner place, they had classrooms in the prison, and the classrooms, the desks and everything were nicer, the classroom in the school was shared as a locker room. And the school that I went to was exactly that, was an average school. I could have... I have certainly people sending me articles and information and telling me about schools that are much, much worse. And I didn't bother including going to these places where there are these trailers that were converted into school rooms and the steel is rusted and rotted and just these unbelievably atrocious conditions that kids have to spend 8 months, 9 months, 10 months out of the year at these places that are just unbelievably atrocious. And it just wasn't necessary to show the extremes. It would have confused the point, because I still get people who you know, watch the film and teachers who think, "Wow, that's not my school," but they're missing the point because it is. I have demonstrations where their SWAT teams had raided one high school because their principal had suspected that drug use was going on, and the SWAT team has all the kids lie down at gunpoint. That's not a regular occurrence, but the fact that it can occur and does occur is certainly cause for concern. But the general environment is true for all schools in terms of you have a place where children are taken away from communities and placed in an environment where they have no meaningful voice. The first lesson of school is that your thoughts and opinions don't matter. And by that I mean, you know, everyone in kindergarten or first grade or, you know, or so had something that they were interested or passionate about. And invariably, whatever that was, I can say with almost complete certainty, was something that they were not going to learn in school and would not be on the lesson plan, and was something that they pretty much had to abandon trying to even explore or investigate on their own, because school time precluded that. You're not graded for what, you know, for the things that you enjoy or are interested in. And you have to, if you want to do well in the things that you're graded on, you have to give up on the things that you're interested in. So these things that are fundamental to all public schools, and people who just look at some of the extreme things, which is, again, why, like I said, I didn't go to the extreme environments of schools that are really in bad shape, really dilapidated, was to try to do my best to drive home to get people to appreciate that this is something that's taking place in all schools.
You show footage of this SWAT team raid where these young people, adolescents, are on the floor at gunpoint with drug-sniffing dogs, sniffing their backpacks, and so on. And it was harrowing just for me to watch. And I wonder if the adults doing this forget that these are the kids' formative experience, that incidents like this actually shape them for life, whether it happens to them, to a classmate, whether a student is handcuffed and taken out by the police. It has to destroy their sense of justice and fill them with a sense of anger and disempowerment. I mean, you quote one student as saying, what we're learning here is that you're guilty till proven innocent.
Yeah, you'd think that the lesson would be learning, would be just that in terms of the way the adults are. But actually, the raid on Goose Creek in South Carolina, the parents are very conscientious of the issues that you state, but their conclusions are completely 180. The thought that many, in that case, most parents, because there actually was an outpouring of support for the principal's actions, even though that no drugs were found, because the prevailing belief among many is that the kids will learn from these experiences the dangers of drug possession, that they need to stay away from this, that this is serious stuff, and by being restrained at gunpoint and having these dogs come in will teach them the very valuable lesson of staying away from drugs or other things that are potentially harmful. So, yeah, it is done conscientiously with the thought that this is somehow beneficial. So that's the even greater disturbing aspect of these forms of tactics.
Well, you talked to a lot of kids. What did they themselves say about incidents like that?
They're horrified. They generally don't want to. I have seen plenty of reports. I mean, the kids that I spoke to were generally didn't like that kind of treatment, as most people would. I have seen news reports of kids who are suspended for, I think there was one news report where some administrator was fining kids $100 if they said a swear word. And some of the kids they interviewed who say they just don't use that kind of language were pretty indifferent about the whole thing. And I think that there's a point where the schools just beat kids down and they just don't care. They become apathetic and they, if it doesn't involve them, they don't care. In fact, the levels of apathy that I've noticed are much greater in affluent communities, because in the affluent communities, the attitudes and thoughts of the kids are, I just have to endure school for a certain number of years, and once I get out, I'm going to make it. It doesn't really matter. My future and everything is already set up for me, and this is an unfortunate environment or situation, but there's absolutely no reason for me to rock the boat because, I'm the winner at the end of the day. So you really have this kind of caste system that's already been created, and there isn't much reason to protest. And instantly in the less affluent communities, the hammer comes down much harder on people who resist and protest. So it's just a miserable situation all around.
We're talking to Kevin Soling. His film is called The War on Kids. There's a lot of ironies in the film, and as we've talked about, one is that the many prescription drugs that are prescribed to kids often make them worse in the long run. They become docile, but then their growth is stunted and they become more likely to actually abuse drugs and alcohol and cigarettes. But another great irony is that all of this, there's a huge amount of surveillance in schools. I mean, I have to tell you, Kevin, this film made me feel ancient because we didn't have any of this kind of stuff. We didn't have drugs. We didn't have cameras. It was unheard of when I was a child. But the irony is it seems like all this surveillance doesn't make the kids any safer, metal detectors and so on. And in fact, as we know, there were cameras filming the entire Columbine incident.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's so much of reaction is based on, how feeling good or feeling like one is doing something. The Indiana Policy Institute had done an extensive study on the effects of locker searches and metal detectors and security cameras and found that they do not have any positive impact on school safety. They didn't study the detrimental impact. That wasn't sort of the focus of the study. But just from the anecdotal evidence, it really does create a state of paranoia among the students who are under surveillance all the time. And there are some schools where the cameras go directly to the police station, and some places the cameras are in the classrooms themselves, not just in the hallways. So they're under surveillance all the time, and there is a psychological impact to that that is, I believe, pretty profound.
You managed to make the film not only very enlightening, but also really amusing. One of the things that I enjoyed was some of the videos that you showed of these programs called things like Dare to Keep Kids Off Drugs, and the incredibly lame, what would you call it, visuals that they're showing to kids that they think are going to get them to get on a non-drug platform. The kids themselves, there they are saying, yeah, right, this is so stupid.
You know, Dare is a perfect example of a program that was conceived of that feels good. It just seems like people want to keep kids off drugs, which, again, is sort of a fallacy in and of itself, because just looking at the statistics, baby boomers are the chief abusers of drugs, and yet we target kids because we can, and they have no power and voice, whereas, you know, baby boomers certainly control the political environment, and so you already have sort of this unrealistic discussion. But the problem with Dare is, you know, it seems like some kind of response to an issue that people wanted to deal with. But there is this lack of desire to want to investigate the efficacy. And I came up with, I think, 5 different studies showing that Dare doesn't work. And not only doesn't it work, but there are several studies that seem to indicate that it gets kids thinking more about drugs and leads them to actually experiment with drugs at a younger age than those who didn't go through the DARE program. But again, it feels good, and people just aren't very interested in looking at rigorous studies. I just really was scratching my head when I was reading so many of these different studies while working on the film as to why, you know, how these studies get their funding anymore when they're just completely ignored. People just don't really have much interest in anything beyond what feels like it should be a proper response to a situation. So that was, you know, definitely, and security cameras certainly fall under that as well, in spite of, even like you mentioned about Columbine, there being security cameras in Columbine. And rather than looking into the possibility that security cameras might have been a contributing factor to a bad situation, it's looked at as a response, because people feel, well, we have to respond in some way, which is correct, but it should be, the response needs to be done in an intelligent, well thought out manner that actually addresses issues and doesn't just try to put a Band-Aid on symptoms or hide symptoms as concept of the drugs, or just to repress symptoms of some underlying issue.
Well, I mean, the Columbine massacre is another example of, and you cite many of them in your film, the lead shooter was taking antidepressants that were prescribed for adults. And many, many of the people, of the young people who have engaged in that horrific headline-making high school violence were on antidepressants of some kind.
Yeah, I mean, it's a remarkably high number. And again, it's stunning that there hasn't been adequate response to that. There have been a number of quite a number of kids who have had bad reactions or overdosed to these drugs that they've been given, and yet I've yet to hear of a single example of anyone who has died from the supposed disorder that they allegedly have. So again, as you know, you've got a whole issue of the risk of the drugs is profoundly greater than whatever health risks of the alleged disorder.
The alleged disorder, yeah. I mean, there's so much to talk about in this film, and I don't want to give away the whole entire film right now, and we're going to have to go in a minute. But the thing that, well, I guess the thing I want to ask you is, what is to be done? I mean, this film is going to be shown, sponsored by the Parent-Teacher Committee of Santa Fe High School. I encourage every parent, if not every citizen, to see this film, because it really does something that I don't think has really been done very much in terms of putting all of these phenomena together in one place for people to see and to talk about. I think it's the film is potentially a great stimulation for conversation. But what is to be done? What can parents, what can the community do about their schools?
Well, there are a few things. I think there are a number of baby steps, I guess, that are taken, but some which have profound impact. One is, I see as the great solution for the problem, at least idealistically or to strive for, is communities and developing communities. And the function of schools is to break down communities and culture, because you take children away from their communities, away from people that would care about them, have the greatest vested interest in them, theoretically have a situation where parents would not only be concerned about only their own children, but the kids in their community. But once they're taken away, it leads to alienation and apathy, because they don't have to. It's not their issue. It's the school's issue. And, you know, again, schools are run by social efficiency. There isn't that same need. And the values of the people that they're teaching them are often at odds with the value of the communities that where the kids come from, their cultures. So it's working certainly towards the restoration of communal environment where you have multiple people that care about their kids and their future. But in the short run, it's a matter of respecting kids and just understanding and appreciating that they are human beings, that they should have rights, and that they should be respected, and that the desire to do what is best for them might be well-intentioned, but it's very often ill-conceived. And there are things like, I go into discussion of homework, and by and large, just about all kids hate homework, and it turns out from extensive research that homework, certainly before high school and oftentimes even in high school, but certainly before high school, is actually detrimental and does not help in the learning process. But again, the presumption is that, well, we know what's best for kids and we're doing the right thing and we're not going to listen to them and we're not going to take into account the things that they don't like because, you know, we know better. And it's this continuous disregard for their interest and the continuous desire to not allow them to develop in healthy, normal ways by keeping them in these impressive environments is ultimately what needs to be, you know, reconceived and can be addressed in the short run. Once we go down that path, there can be greater improvements.
Kevin Soling is a filmmaker, writer, and musician. His new film is called The War on Kids. And once again, it's screening in Santa Fe on Monday, the 22nd of February at 6 in the evening. It's a free showing at the Educational Services Center at 610 Alta Vista Street. It's sponsored by the Santa Fe High School Parent Teacher Committee. Kevin Soling, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much again for having me.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find me at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.